Hi, I'm Rob Brown, and I'm your host of this Accounting Influencers podcast. Every week, you get interviews and insights from leaders and influencers globally about growth, leadership, talent, succession, tech, performance, and those special things that make the good accountants and accounting firms great. Enjoy today's episode, and let's get started. Welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have me today, a true accounting influencer, Mike McCallowitz. Good day to you, sir.
Rob, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Mike, it's super to have you on the show. Just give us a flavor of your background and the stuff you're really passionate about.
I've been an entrepreneur my entire adult life, ever since university. I am a full-time author, and I study entrepreneurship from my own experiences, but really from investigating other businesses and what allows people to serve the communities they want to serve, to make the income they want to make, to have the freedom they want to have. My most popular book is Profit First. That's pretty big in the accounting communities. I have 7 books I've written, and I anticipate I'll do quite a few more. That's my hope.
Sure. And it's the Profit First movement that drew you into the world of accountants and bookkeepers, right?
Yes. I've had businesses in the tech space, and we've always relied on accountants and bookkeepers. It was very much oriented toward just crunching the numbers, interpreting numbers. But it was all historical, like, oh, last quarter you did this, so maybe you want to consider doing that. Mm. And I was like, what if we were more forward-thinking? What if it was more locked arms, walking step in step, moving the business forward? I thought Profit First, as I was writing that, maybe would solve that need that I, as a consumer of bookkeeping and accounting services, needed.
Yeah. And we've had your right-hand man, Ron Saharian, on as a guest of the show. But yeah, Briefly, in 30 seconds, do you just want to explain to us the Profit First methodology, Mike? And then we'll go on to talk about today's topic.
Sure. It's based on behavioral studies. That's my passion, how our minds operate. The foundational principle in traditional accounting, in the U.S. deemed as GAAP accounting, generally accepted accounting principles, is that you have to have sales revenue. You subtract your expenses and the remainder is profit.
Yeah.
And that makes logical sense, but it doesn't make behavioral sense, because behaviorally, we human animals, when we see something come last, it means it's insignificant. I would never say, I love my family so much, I've decided to put them last finally. Last means it doesn't matter. And the vernacular we use, we call profit, the bottom line, final take, the year end, all those phrases say that don't worry about it until next year. Mm-hmm. And therefore, for the vast majority of businesses, not on the forefront of our mind. So the core principle of Profit First is to put the profit first before expenses. So it's sales minus profit equals expenses.
Yeah.
And in practice, as revenue comes into our firm, we take a percentage of that turnover, we tuck it away as profit, and then what's left over, that's our expenses. And that tells us what we have to run our business off.
That makes sense, although it's counterintuitive. Now, it's a worldwide movement, isn't it? You've got accountants and bookkeepers involved in this across the globe.
It's over 600 actively certified accountants and bookkeepers. Our big presence is in the US, but we have offices in Australia, the Netherlands, and England. Yeah, it's growing. The application of Profit First is a global application. The principle's the same. The practical components do change. So the rules and regulations in UK, for example, versus in the US are different enough that you need a local practitioner to understand how to implement Profit First optimally.
Talk to us about this new book, because here's my book. I've not written 7, but my book, Build Your Reputation, is about standing out. It's about being different. And it's not so much for entrepreneurs, actually, because an entrepreneur can put anything up on a website, be on social media with impunity and pretty much say anything, get what they want printed on their business cards. They can start a blog or not. But when you're in a more corporate or professional role, like say accounting or bookkeeping or legal or something like that, there are some constraints to get noticed and be differentiated in a marketplace. So it's called Get Different. Tell us how it came about and then we'll unpack it a bit more.
Sure. So that's my newest book. I started surveying audiences during live engagements, now with COVID, over virtual engagements. Mm. And I found a fascinating common approach to generating leads and opportunities. When I ask people, what's your primary source? And I start giving them options. The number one source for lead generation for almost all small business globally is word of mouth.
Yep.
And so I'd say, you know, how do your businesses? And proudly, boastfully, people were pounding their chest saying, 90% of my leads come in from my clients, 100%. And I understand the boastfulness because that's your reputation.
Yeah.
But the challenge is you are at the whim of your clients promoting you. If your client decides, I don't want to market for your business anymore, I'm going to focus on my business, you're done.
It means you've got a great name, you're right, but you're relying on third parties to dictate the speed of growth of your business.
That's exactly right. And it's at their whim. They're the ones in control of the throttle.
Yeah. And you don't know what's coming in and of what magnitude and whether it's the right kind of introduction.
Correct. So what happens is our business is like an amoeba, kind of just morphs and changes. It's not deliberate.
Yeah.
So I wrote Get Different to specifically and deliberately drive lead flow, where we're in control of the throttle. We will still receive leads from our clients, and that's a wonderful affirmation, but that's the icing on the cake. Uh-huh. I wrote Get Different to be the cake itself. The core discovery I had with Get Different is that to be successful in marketing, we must differentiate. Just real quick, playing to behavioral science, that's my core interest, is the human mind processes information based upon four distinct levels, and they're prioritized as follows. Number one is threats. If you and I are meeting and I plop down a gun on the table, say, hey, Rob, this interview should go a little bit longer, I guarantee I have your attention because I put a threat on the table. I also, though, put us in a combative situation. You'll probably punch me in the nose, you know, break my face to defend yourself. Say that's a hostile situation, and that's not effective in marketing. It is effective in getting attention, but not marketing. Second priority is opportunity. If I throw down $1 million, said, hey, Rob, let's continue this conversation for an extra hour, I again have your attention.
I'm in.
You're in. But I have a risk here. You may take the money and say, well, now I have the money. I don't know if we should go an extra hour, and call it quit. So you have total control. The third opportunity is the unexpected. Unexpected is when something presents itself that we're not familiar with, our mind automatically has to evaluate it. Is it an opportunity or a threat? And the fourth layer, by the way, is the ignorable. 99.99999% of stuff is ignorable. If you look around your desk right now, there's lots of stuff that could garner your attention. We're not giving it attention. To maintain focus, we must ignore almost everything. So in marketing, threats and opportunities are ineffective because it puts us in an awkward position. The unexpected, aka the different, guarantees attention. Once you have attention, you have to show this now as a way to proceed forward, as an opportunity, and then ultimately give a specific direction. Mm-hmm. So to summarize this, in the book, I teach a framework called DAD, D-A-D, it's an acronym. Differentiate, do something that makes you stand out and gets noticed. A, ensure it's attractive. It speaks to the desire, interest, curiosity of the prospect. And then the last D is direct. Give a specific and reasonable action for that prospect to take to matriculate the relationship to where you want it to go, to the ultimate transaction.
That makes great sense. And marketing and business development, selling, they've been a mystery to accountants and bookkeepers for many years, Mike, haven't they?
Yeah. You know why? Because we rely on best practices. Now, I'm not poo-pooing best practices in most applications. If another accounting firm has a best practice in hiring great talent, we should replicate that. If they have a best practice in their operations and serving clients, we should replicate that. The one area to avoid best practices, though, is in marketing, because it forms what's called habituation. Habituation is where the receiver gets a certain type of information repeatedly over time and very quickly acclimates to this is irrelevant and then ignore it, no matter however or how often you present it. We need to be the first to do something. As an accountant, don't do the best practice. That's become habituated. People are ignoring that. Do something that's new for your prospect. And a real simple way to do this is look at outside your industry. Look how other businesses market and do some R&D, stands for rip off and duplicate.
Yeah.
Take their concepts that they're using to market, introduce it to your prospects. If it's something they haven't experienced, you guarantee the first step you'll have attention because it's unexpected. Now you have to simply show attraction and direct them to do something and you'll win the marketing game.
And this sounds like a word in season, as the Bible says, a book for the right time, because tell us how COVID and the challenging times that we're in has changed the way firms need to present themselves.
Yeah, that's a great question. What I saw in COVID is, to some degree, the rally of large companies, especially in the e-commerce space. So I'm thinking Amazon as an example. Amazon, at least in the United States, I think this was global too, adjusted during COVID to move to essential products. They changed their format and they were able to grab about 23% more revenue, where small retailers and so forth in the US had a catastrophic drop.
Yeah.
But here's the honest truth. The local retailer cares more about their customer. It's run by the owner. You know, Jeff Bezos isn't packing your package and shipping it to you and saying, I hope this serves you. He's not doing the follow-up phone call, but the local retailer is.
Yeah.
Small business inevitably gives better customer service, is more nimble and fast to respond, is more attentive to the customer, is more thorough. And therefore, small business in general is better for in the customer's interest than big business. Therefore, we, the small business, have a responsibility to market. Because you see, in this new environment, if we aren't discovered, if we're ignorable, and the customer hires a lesser provider, a larger provider, that will result in the customer having a problem because they're receiving less benefit. And it's the customer's problem, but it's our fault. Mm-hmm. So I am emphatic that marketing is the ultimate act of kindness. We need to market small businesses. We need the customer to discover us, because if we are truly the better solution, they have to discover us because it's better for them.
And have you noticed in the last 18 months, the sheer amount of noise, everyone's moved to remote, to virtual, visual. So online is absolutely crammed with marketing messages now. It is even harder to stand out. In the book, you argue that marketing is now a necessity.
Yeah. And so here's the irony. I would argue it's easier to stand out because as there is an amplification of marketing, there is a herding effect. More people are doing more of the same thing. So this amplification is you're receiving more emails, but it's the same thing. Have a catchy phrase in the beginning, write an email that has two links in it. You'll see actually more of the same stuff replicated. Subtle adjustments can be extremely effective. I actually made a worksheet of 100 different marketing tips that are radically different. You can do immediately and they cost nothing. And one of the tips is this. I started sending out invisible ink emails. And chances are you've never received one of these, Rob. I put the text in white against a white background so you see nothing. And in the very beginning, it says, I have a secret invisible ink message for you. Simply click and drag over it and you'll see it and it reveals itself. This is work. I've got over a 2x click-through rate on this email. The reason is a couple of things. First of all, it's different. If you've never received one before, it's different. So you notice and pay a little attention to it. The second thing is for many people, it passes the attractor factor. It harkens back to when we were children, there was invisible ink games and stuff you could do.
Spies and things like
that. Exactly. Like a spy game. It also invokes curiosity. Like, what is the message? And then the direct was embedded in there. It said, hey, if you enjoyed this, I have more stuff for you to check out. Click on this link. So 99% the same as everyone else. I just, the 1% that was so different, never experienced before, that it radically changed things. I am not saying to be an effective marketer, you have to be outrageous or extraordinarily different. You just got to pick your space and just turn the ratchet 10 degrees and people will start taking notice.
That's so true, because if you are radically different, you often get rejected by the marketplace. You're the pioneer that ends up face down in the dirt with an arrow in their back because you tried something and people weren't willing to take it on. There wasn't enough early adopters, but a little bit different is interesting.
Yeah. Like, could you imagine an accountant saying, I have to get noticed. I'm going to start dressing like a clown. I'm going to wear the Bozo the Clown shoes, the big oversized collars and that, you know, yucca yucca horn. We will notice, but it doesn't pass the second test, which is the attractor factor. There is a repulsion there. So what we need to be is different. A clown will get noticed, but it must also be attractive. It must speak to the audience's interest, desire, or curiosity. That's the key.
When you talk about accountants standing out, we said they don't see themselves as marketers. So is this book written for those firms that have a marketing professional or someone dedicated to it? Or is this for the accountant and bookkeeper that can do this bit of marketing as well as everything else that they're doing?
I wrote it for the business owner. So I wrote it for the accountant, where you don't have a marketing department. You don't have the marketing budget. You just don't have the business you want or deserve, and you need to amplify it. I think what's interesting is consistently, it wasn't about being radically different. It was actually about amplifying the natural tendencies that was expressed by the person internally.
Yeah.
So we worked with an accountant who is extremely professional. And they said, I can't do goofy marketing. And we're like, you shouldn't. It's incongruent. We should do the most professional marketing. We had another person who's just kind of very self-deprecating. And he changed his website. It was the same website he always had. He does branding. And he started drawing funny faces on himself. So you visit this website and it keeps on making new funny faces. A really fun, interesting, self-deprecating approach. And instantly it started getting noticed. But in all cases, when the business owner started marketing in a way that was consistent with their innate design, they started to build confidence in their marketing. They were much more bold as opposed to trying to comply with what they're told is a best practice or do something that they hear is outrageous, that is inconsistent with who they are.
Yeah. And it's get different targeted at bringing in fresh new clients, new prospects, or getting more from your existing clients to notice you so you can sell additional services and even get referrals from them.
This is specifically for acquiring new clients.
Right. It's getting noticed. It's getting on the radars of people that don't necessarily know you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sadly, small business is invisible to so many prospects. They will never know of you, never hear of you.
Yeah, you're a well-kept secret, right?
Yeah, we're the best kept secret.
Yeah.
And that's the worst position to be in. You know, the large companies have the budget. They have what's called incumbent status, which means they've achieved a degree of word of mouth. They own a little space of the prospect's mind.
Yeah.
We as small businesses don't, but there's that quick way in there, which is by doing different. So if you're looking to acquire new clients, this is your tool. If you're looking to expand services with your existing clients, this may serve you, but it wasn't written for that purpose.
So I can see this is for the owner of a small accounting firm or practice, a few partners, but it could also be for the accountant in a larger firm that wants to take responsibility for some of their own business development, become something of a rainmaker, generate some opportunities for the firm, build some career capital. They could deploy some of these strategies, right?
That's exactly right. I have sections in the book for, I call it the marketing team or entrepreneurs. One of the stories in there is a sizable restaurant, and one of the managers decided she wanted to have great impact and started a campaign, which interestingly, Maine Corporate said, you can do this, but we don't believe in this. What it was is she started sending out candles to people on their birthday. So these are past patrons. So this is a way of amplifying your existing clients, but she went to past patrons and said, hey, your birthday's coming up. We'd like to offer you a free dinner. No strings attached. It's slightly different, but traditional marketing is, hey, send a postcard saying happy birthday, 10% off. Mm. This also notably was not a lowbrow restaurant. This was actually a 5-star restaurant. So it was very atypical. And that's why they were against it. It was their most impactful campaign of all time. The patrons flocked in, claimed a free dinner, and who celebrates their dinner by themselves? Basically no one. Yeah. So they would bring in guests and family. It was a boon for business.
I like the fact that you're encouraging accountants to think like business owners and be entrepreneurial, because they're the professional advisor. They're the trusted peer of the buyer, if you like, and they're technically super smart, but they don't often think like business owners. They don't think entrepreneurially, but they've got to grow their practice.
It's the foundation. If I call myself an accountant, I've called myself, I have a job. If I call myself a business owner, I've redefined my identity. And I actually take it a degree further now. I call myself a shareholder of a small business.
Right.
Because I believe business ownership, entrepreneurship has become bastardized to equate to hustle and grind, to work harder and longer. And that is not the goal. I believe our job is actually to create jobs. We have a propensity, a skill set that we can develop to serve clients initially, but our job then is to provide that opportunity for others as we build the business to whatever our vision may be. So if we change the label of how we see ourselves, we'll start to conform with that new identity.
Right. I get that. But accountants that are employed even can think entrepreneurially because they want to grow the firm that they work for. They want to bring in new business opportunities, maybe even build a team around a service line or a sector. So they can do it even if they don't own the firm.
Oh, totally. And now your label is maybe intrapreneur, or maybe it is still shareholder. We are all leaders of our own lives. There's no question about that. I would just find a label that assumes what you envision for yourself. We have to be very careful about the labels we select.
Yeah. What's going to happen to the firms that don't see marketing as a necessity, Mark?
Well, ultimately, they go away. Marketing is a necessity for survival. You have to get noticed. Mm. But most of us do it at a very base level. So those businesses that don't see marketing as a necessity and ignore it may just kind of flounder by. Some will ultimately get wiped out. And I experienced this. My first company, I was a computer technician. I was doing moderately okay. And then a business came in called Geek Squad, which was doing the exact same stuff I did. They just marketed far more superiorly. They even changed their outfits. They wore costumes when they did their work to look like geeks.
Yeah.
They crushed it. The owner, Robert Stevens, sold to a company called Best Buy. They are at a $1 billion valuation today. And my little company floundered along. So if you don't see marketing as a necessity, if you don't feel that marketing is something that you must be superior at, your destiny may be to just go with the flow of the river, but someone's going to come through and crush you who really gets it. If your business is superior, why not be you the one who gets it, markets accordingly, and is great service to your clients?
Yeah, this is great, Mike. So what would you say to the accountant bookkeeper listening that said, okay, Mike, I get it. I know I need to be marketing. I don't know where to start. I don't know the first step. Just put me on the path.
Yeah, and it's fear-ridden too. Here's the bipolarism of humanity. We want to stand out without standing out. We want to get noticed without being noticeable. It is a hardwired fact into humanity, and that's why we struggle so much. I would argue the easiest way to get started is just start doing random acts of kindness. The reason is even that takes courage. And the first thing we need to do is start building the muscle. But the gift you get when you do a random act of kindness is this internal gratitude. That person will never know you were the source, but you always know you were. So fill the meter for someone at a parking lot and just put money in there. Mm-hmm. Pay for someone else's dinner as you escape the restaurant and they never know that you were the one who paid for them. Do those things and you'll start building this confidence that you can do things that are different and you'll feel the internal reward. Then we flip the switch and we do your, I call them marketing experiments. We start testing things out. Perhaps you can use that list of 100 things I created, but you start testing things out and you'll see that this is also now no longer a random act of kindness. This is a deliberate act of kindness.
What advice have you got for people that do the marketing? They create the interest, but they've got to start a sales conversation. They've got to start selling something. They've got to turn that opportunity into real business. That's a sticking point sometimes, isn't it?
It is. So many people I've talked to said, once I start selling, this is bothersome. I'm trying to manipulate the customer.
Yeah, I don't like that word.
Yeah, but yeah, I don't like the word because I feel that it's confrontational.
Yeah. And they didn't come into accounting and bookkeeping to be salespeople, did they?
Yeah. When I work with our accountants and bookkeepers and they say they have a sales call coming up, I say, whoop, stop. You don't have any sales calls. You have service calls.
Right.
You're being of service.
You're reframing it.
Yeah, reframing it. And when you see it this way, it's like, oh, my job simply is to educate the customer so they can make an appropriate decision.
Yeah.
Maybe I can satisfy their need on this call alone and we depart ways. And now is a deliberate act of kindness. But if we go in as a service call, now we're elevated in into that. So I would challenge anyone that feels frightened to do a sales call to realize you're not doing sales calls going forward. We're only doing calls of service calls.
This is brilliant, Mike. If people want to get a hold of the book or get in touch with you and have a conversation about the great stuff you do, what's a good way for them to read?
The best way is to go to gogetdifferent.com. There, you can get the book, of course, but there's a free resource link. That's where I have those 100 free tips. And I assure you, they're low to no cost and they'll have an immediate impact. Maybe you won't get a squadron of people buying from you, but you'll have an immediate belief in yourself that you can do different. And as you experiment, I think you're going to find what works for you.
Yeah. Now, you're a passionate evangelist, Mike. You really believe in what you're doing. You started a global movement. You obviously want to get the word out about getting different. Talk to us about what's going to happen in the next few years as we look at the future of marketing for accounting and bookkeeping professionals. What do you see coming up?
Yeah, well, I think we've all heard and are aware, but I don't know if we're acting on it, that there is a rise in technology. And here's the interesting thing that you don't hear, and there's studies to back this. People trust algorithms more than people trust people.
Wow.
So there's a danger in trying to be a trusted advisor because the computer is trusted more. What you need to be is the emotional connection. What we have to do is be the confidant. I invite people to become a mentor in a capacity where you're paid and compensated, but as opposed to being a trusted advisor, you are a mentor and you position yourself that way, that you will help interpret what the computer says. You'll give guidance, emotional support. You'll help people through the dips and valleys. And the way to do this is just to be raw and real about your own journey. There's a thing called the pratfall effect. I talk about that in this book too. What most businesses do is put out all the accolades about how great we are. But the pratfall effect was a study that when you show your humanity and your errors, that you're actually more compelling and attractive. It builds a stronger connection and bond. So our goal in the years ahead is to do marketing that builds bonds.
This is great, Mike. Niching. Do you need to do that? Do you need to pick a target market? I know it sounds pretty basic, but still we get accountants trying to be everything to everyone. And that's hard to differentiate, isn't it?
Impossible. Unequivocally, you need to niche. The richer the niches.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm not an accountant, but I went in that market and we were able with effort to build a global brand. If I said, hey, I have Profit First out there. And by the way, anyone can get certified. Anyone can do this. It's for everyone. I would attract no one.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying we need to do this. I am experiencing this. And every business I've grown successfully, it's always been with niche specialization.
Yeah. Mike Michalowicz, gogetdifferent.com. This has been a brilliant talk. Thanks so much for your time and your insights today.
It's been a pleasure, mate. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.